Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Mari Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
You're listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 89 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can catch us on all of your favorite podcasting apps and leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts if you want to. And if you're feeling generous, you can leave us a donation at voicesofwrestling.com/donate. And we're also on social media, but we don't really post much there these days on like X and Blue Sky. But Paul, we're back. Paul, we got a lot to talk about
in just one week.
Just 1 week, which was a good idea. Now that I put everything into the run, when I put everything into the run sheet, I'm glad that we came back, because it would have been too unwieldy to leave it another week.
Yeah, no, that would have been like a four-hour show, basically. Or we would have to basically cut down like a lot of stuff, essentially.
But we start off with some very interesting, with an interesting announcement. On August 3rd, at the prestigious Shinkiba First Ring, for a 0-1 show, we are getting Masato Tanaka versus Hayabusa, and the loser leaves 0-1. Paul, is Masato Tanaka leaving 0-1?
I mean, the only thing that makes sense there, right? Like, if there even is a finish, right? because
yes, I have a 30-minute time limit.
It has a 30-minute time limit. So I feel like that's the most likely outcome. Because, I mean, they just reformed 0-1. And then to lose, like, what is still, like, their biggest draw is a bad idea. And them unmasking the guy they just very obviously put a lot of stock into. Because won the Fyre Festival and everything. That's also really stupid. So
it's not. It's not loser leaves. It's Tanaka leaves if he loses and Hayabusa unmasks.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, there's also no point. Like, why the fuck did you just put in all of this effort pushing this new Hayabusa if you're gonna have him then immediately unmask, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense either. So I feel like if there is a finish, Tanaka is leaving, but I feel like it's just gonna be a draw. I feel like then there's no way they're gonna like actually do.
Well, that just seems incredibly stupid.
Yes, but like, I mean, 0-1, there's a reason why 0-1 is in the position it's in.
And you're doing all this just to fill Shinkiba.
Yeah, which shows you how badly they're doing.
Yeah, so that's something to watch out. I don't know. I just have this feeling that Tanaka's leaving. I don't know.
I mean, might also be the case, right? Like, again, if they're like struggling to like fill Shinkiba, I mean, I would assume Tanaka makes at least decent money.
This new 0-1, if you look at it, it's pretty dire.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no way they can actually afford him.
Yeah. So that's my prediction, but, you know, they could just do an incredibly stupid double swerve.
Yeah.
And do that. So then we'll go to Noah. So just some notes. I did some quick number crunching, and I wanted to see, sort of look at Ozawa's drawing, since he won the title on the first show of the year. So in 2024, from January 1st to July 1st, Noah had 47 shows, a total of 35,345 in attendance for an average attendance of 752. In 2025, from the same month, from like January to the end of June, they had 44 shows, 35,938 in total for an average attendance of 817. Now, these numbers do not include Monday Magic because we've only been given one Monday Magic attendance. So you can quibble about that, but I don't think that's going to radically change the average attendance because they would be pulling in maybe 400 people on those Monday Magic shows at best.
And I mean, they're in the same building always.
Yeah. So, Paul, what do you think of that? I mean, what I think has happened is that Noah has downscaled their larger shows and they are the Kings of Cork in these days. But I think that somewhat obscures the fact that the jump is not huge, but it is an increase. Their business is up.
Yeah. To me, it really is like the fact that like they're not running like half empty big buildings, right? Because like you draw like they were drawing like 960 people in like Yokohama Budokan. So and that was last year. So, and that was in the first half of last year as well. So I feel like if you don't have those shows and instead you just run it like Yokohama, if instead you do like Yokohama Raiden Hall, right? Like you draw like 300 people. So even if like the Yokohama Budokan was like half empty and you sell out like the Yokohama Raiden Hall, then like that's still going to be a difference of like 600 people. So I think that's why the jump isn't as high as it is, because even if they were drawing badly in those bigger buildings, they were still drawing like more people in those bigger buildings. And I think that's then kind of like makes the average for last year look a lot better. What would actually be interesting, and that's unfortunately basically impossible to do, would be to like get essentially like percentage sellout figure is like comparatively year over year. I think that might be like if you add that to this statistic, I think that would be much more interesting than to see like, okay, they drew more people on average, and on average they sold out more of the buildings that they were running as well, which again, that's next to impossible. Like that would require like you would have to get like the max capacity for all of those buildings essentially. That's gonna be tough, but I think if you do that, I think then you would get a better view of like how big the actual jump was, I would say, because it has to be seen relative to the schedule that they're running.
So, but you could still say that Ozawa is a success.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Especially given his core and sellout percentage, which is pretty high.
Yeah. And hey, look, like the moment he was no longer champion, what happened? Korakuen attendance dropped. So, you know, I mean, it dropped by like three people, but. You know.
Yeah, but that was also a show that didn't have anything announced until right before. Yeah.
And oh no, sorry, it was four people. Yeah, so yeah, those four people were like, there's nothing announced, so I'm not coming, apparently.
So we'll start with the Study Voyage 2025 on July 13th real quick, because this show wasn't released on Wrestling Universe, even though it happened after we recorded or before we recorded last week. But I'll just say, I watched Takashi Sugera defeating Daiki Inaba in 12:51 by referee stop with a front net lock, front neck lock, excuse me. That was a solid, nice little match. As you could assume, it was like a lot of Inaba playing the underdog, being fiery and not staying down, and Sugera just beating the crap out of him, but it was pretty good. And then the main event was Galeno defeating Will Cruz to retain the GHC national title in 16:51 with the Wagner driver to make his third defense of that title. And I thought that this is another solid main event, and they did all of the big boy spots that you were hoping for.
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah, I'm still not uncertain with Galeno. I mean, he's still quite young, but he is a champion, yeah. So I kind of have to hold him to a higher standard than I think I really should. Like, it's this weird spot where, like, he doesn't have that much experience, and he's still only, like, 22, but, like, because he is so far up the company, where I'm like, I mean, like you said, like, it was a decent match, but, like, I also kind of have higher expectation for the national title. But then again, it was also just in, like, a secondary building as well, so I guess it was fine, but I have still yet to see that Galeno can actually go at that top level, though.
Well, he can. I think that's fair to say, but they want him to.
Yeah, but yeah, I just think it's too early. Like, and I think maybe that's also why they're like putting his mattress in like these smaller buildings as well, so it doesn't become as obvious.
Well, they've sort of decided to downcycle the national title, because not that, like, when it started, it was like, you know,
it was a proper 1B title. Like the first, like, yeah. I think like Wagner was like the first champion that wasn't a world champion prior to winning that title.
Right.
So like it was very prestigious. It was like the one, like it wasn't the secondary title. It was the 1B title. And now with Galeno, it very much like, I don't even like, it doesn't even feel like the secondary title, to be honest.
Well, there's the whole Ozawa winning it and throwing it down.
Yeah. I mean, that really hurt it. Yeah.
So from there we go to Pro Wrestling NOAH 25th Anniversary New Departure Day 1 on July 19th at Corken Hall for 1,596 fans for a Super No Vacancy Full House. And we began the show with Naomichi Marufuji and Daiki Odoshima defeating Kenta and Junta Miyawaki in 12:51 with the Rolling Olympic Hell Part 1 from Odoshima on Miyawaki in a surprise to score his first win of his career. And I love this match, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
What a great no, opener.
Great. Yeah.
Poor Junta, though.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if it's anybody in this company that this was going to happen to, it was always going to be Junta.
Yeah.
But I did pop big for, like, when Odoshima actually got the win.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it was a big moment, and Korakin loves him. He's got that crowd connection already. But, you know, I mean, I think they're pretty serious about Odoshima. So, you know, and they're doing another, I just read this today in the VOW Discord, but they're doing another call for recruits to the dojo. So things are looking healthy after a lot of years of nothing on that front.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it seems like whatever changes they made to the dojo are very clearly working out, because for a while there was like nobody ever making it out of there. And now, like, it seems like they have like an actual like regular stream of talents like getting pumped out of there, which they really desperately need.
The next up was Dragon Bane, Alpha Wolf, and Super Crazy defeating Shuhei Taniguchi, Will Cruz, and Hajime Ohara in 9:36 with the Twister Bane from Bane on Ohara. Well, this was what it was. What a team for the non-Mexicans.
Yes. That was literally the team of just like, okay, who do we still have left on the roster that doesn't have a match yet? Yufri, sure, you're a team. No, you're wrestling the Luchadors. Go not like go there now.
Yeah.
And then, the match. Match was nothing.
Yeah. Match was nothing. Manabu Busoya, Daiki Inaba, Saxon Huxley, and Yuto Kikuchi defeated Uko Sasaki, Amasaka, Eda, and Black Mensa Ray in 9:45 when Soya used the Dando on Mensa Ray. And boy, did Mansell Grover sell this one.
Yeah. I'm still disappointed on the way this whole like Mansell run and Noah is going. Like, I don't know. Like, it just doesn't work. It's weird.
No, it doesn't work. They have him even more comedic than they had him in All Japan.
Yeah. Because he had a serious moment in All Japan, but like, they're not like, basically, he would do like his matches like half comedy, half serious. And now it's just all comedy.
Yeah. So,
in the most serious promotion.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't much at either. But then we go to Takashi Sugiura and Daga defeating Tetsuya Endo and Atsushi Kotoge in 9-12 when Daga pinned Kotoge with the Diablo wings. I mean, poor Kotoge.
Okay. Yeah, we thought he was finally going to get pushed. And nope, yeah. Right back to the bottom.
Right back to the bottom. Match was solid enough, but again, like, not much to say. Then Jack Morris, Tadasuke Iwata-san, and the new Team 2000X member, the returning Null, defeated Kaito Kiyomiya, Galeno, Harutoki, and Alejandro with a chokeslam from Null on Alejandro, which was the right finish for this one in 11:59. And I thought of the undercard matches, other than the opener, that this was probably the best one.
Yeah. I also think Null is a good addition to Team 2000X. Yes. Because, it's clear at this point that Omos isn't going to come back. So, you know, you put like a different like giant in there, and one that is already familiar with the promotion, where, again, I think Null has some potential. So,
yes, I mean, for a guy of his size, he does like decently sized bumps. Like, he took a couple bumps over the top rope that were like, okay, like, not every guy his size will do that. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, and I put a lot of stock in the fact that he was trained by Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
So I think he's a good addition, and like I said, I like bring him back when I saw him the first time, and I think there's some potential there, something to work with, and we'll see.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure.
So then we move on to the semi-main event for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship. Yohei defeated Hayata in 14:55 with the Bamboo Dragonfly to make his fourth defense of the title. Now, just a couple of comments and a question. First. This, since winning the title with a picture-perfect bamboo dragonfly, Yohei has done two that did not land right, including in this match. But, Paul, the more importantly is the question, is 2025 the year of Hayata?
You mean because this is yet another actually better-than-expected Hayata match?
Yes.
I mean, I guess technically it's better than what we normally get from him. I mean, it's still not going to like blow me away. So I'm kind of hesitant to say that. But yeah, no, I will say he was a lot better than I thought he was. I mean, again, I think one of the biggest differences is that they just cut like 5 minutes off of his average match length. Like, they're no longer 20 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes, where he just runs out of ideas and just does like, there's just a middle in the match for like 5 minutes where absolutely nothing happens. So like, now he's just doing like 10 to 15 minute matches, which I think that works a lot better for his style. So I think that's also why they don't like you can't get as much bored anymore as you could like in previous like iterations of Hayata. So I think that really helps him.
And before we get to the main event, I can't remember if it was on this show. I think it was on this show and not the next day, but when did Go come out?
I think Go came out on this show. Yeah, I think he announced here that he's coming back. Yeah.
Well, he says he's going to be back in August, and Harutoki challenged him for his return match, which will happen, I think, on August 16th at Korakuen. So that's something exciting to look forward to. And I assume, we don't know for sure, but I mean, I would assume that Go's going to be in the N1 unless he's like, no, I can't take it.
I mean, but the fact that they made it for an N1 spot.
Oh, it is for an N1 spot. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what they announced. Yeah, that like it's basically which of them wins is going to be in the N1. So I don't know. Like, that actually makes me think Harutoki has a chance, because I don't know if Go can still do an entire N1.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, to be completely honest, I think Harutoki would be a good guy to have on in the N1 because he's very soft and he can lose or whenever.
Exactly. Yeah, you can just like have him pick up like, I don't know, a win or two, and then just have him like have good matches with everybody in this block otherwise.
Yeah,
Whereas with Go, I mean, Go is right, like he's a fairly big star still. So if he's in there, he kind of has to like get wins that maybe you don't want him to, because he probably shouldn't be beating some of those guys anymore.
True. Although it would not shock me, given the 25th anniversary, spoiler alert, that we're going to get a Go versus Kenta match for the title at some point.
Oh, that I can definitely see. Yeah, that basically he like runs through that, like basically Kenta now runs for like the different generations of Noah that, you know, still have representatives.
Yeah.
So he's going to beat Marufuji, beats Go, beats Kaito, then loses to Ozawa or something.
So then we head over to the main event for the GHC Heavyweight Championship. Kenno defeated Ozawa in 22-11 by referee stop because of a super octopus kick to win the title for the third or fourth time?
Fourth. Yeah, because it was two defenses, zero defenses, two defenses, and then, spoiler, zero defense.
Yeah. And he's also the 47th champion, and the champion fell on his seventh defense. Well, Pa, I thought this was a really great match, but then, you know, we get the referee getting pulled out of the ring. But the finish was good in terms of like, oh, that was a surprise, and that's something, right? Ozawa can't beat Kenno type thing. So, I mean, from there, that was fine. But I'm sorry, I'm always going to have a ceiling on these matches when you have this interference and stuff.
I mean,
it started off very well. I thought it started very, very well up until the first interference spot, actually.
I mean, I thought it was still a pretty great match, though. Like, and I feel like we're not going to have this version of Ozawa for that much longer either.
No.
So definitely can like look forward to that one. I really like that they kind of like established Kenno now as this guy that Ozawa just can't beat. Because they had the match like at the beginning of the year, right? Like right after like Ozawa like won the title, where they didn't have a finish for that one, so like he couldn't beat him there. I mean, he didn't lose, but he also couldn't beat him. And then now they like definitively established that no, he can't beat him. Like he lost to him like pretty cleanly, and like he got knocked out as well. So now Kenno has established himself as like the biggest rival of like the young guy yet again by knocking him out. if I had a dollar for every time that happens, I'd have $2, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice.
I'd keep this going for a while. If they're in the same N1 block, I'd have Kenno win again and then save that victory for later.
Oh yeah, no. Like he can't beat, like Ozawa can't beat Kenno for like a while. Like I definitely not this year. Like if he beats him, like I would do that like next year maybe, or maybe even depending how long you want to hold that off. Like maybe you can even hold it off for like a year and a half or so. Like you do it at like basically not this year's or not this year's, not like the 2026 New Year's show. Maybe you do it actually at the 2027 New Year's show or something like that. Because now that's like a big match. Like now that's like a match you can draw a big house with. So like you're not gonna give that win away like for free, basically. Like that should be in a big building, and it should be basically like clearly telegraphed that like it's actually gonna happen now. But I agree, like Kenno should beat him at like one more time before then, maybe in like the N1, for example.
Yeah. And then so after the match, you know, you got Sasaki and Kenta in the ring, and then Kenno's like, I want to face you, to Kenta.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, classical hubris, basically. This is a move that has never backfired on any wrestler ever, is to like, oh, I'm going to challenge you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, look, it became pretty obvious what was going to happen at that point.
Yeah. Especially, forgot who it was, like, pointed out that, like, how short each of Kenno's, like, reigns were.
Yeah. He's not a... It's funny, they decide that he's never the guy to carry the company, even though it feels like he is at points.
Yeah.
In the past, right?
Yeah.
There were times over the last few years where it's like, oh, you should just put it on Kenno and he can just carry the company.
Yeah.
But
I mean, they should have done that, like, basically, like, should have, like, built up, like, Kento correctly and then do that, but they just decided to never do that. And, yeah.
So, that takes us to the New Japan Pro Wrestling Noah 25th Anniversary New Departure Day 2 on the 20th of July at Corcoran Hall again for 1,592 fans. So down 4, as we said, for Super, but still a Super No Vacancy full house, because There were still people in the, like in the upper level standing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, that's what it was. I think all the seats were filled. Paul, is it just me or did this was the crowd on this show hotter?
Yes, this crowd was insanely hot, especially in the main event.
Yeah. So we start off the show with Mohamed Yone and Super Crazy defeating Uko Sasaki and Juta Miyawaki in 5:24 with a muscle buster from Yone on Miyawaki. My God.
Getting beaten like a drum again.
And to think I thought this they were setting Miyawaki up to win the junior title. Like,
nope.
soonish. My God. Okay. So then Manabu Soya, Daiki Nob, and Saxon Huxley defeated Kazuyuki Fujita, Will Cruz, and Deki Odashima. What a great team. In 6:42 with the next bomb from Huxley on Odashima. And I'll say this. Odashima can make Saxon Huxley look like a threatening monster.
Yeah.
He's that good. He's yes. that good.
Also, we continue like my underrated, almost tag team of the year, Kazuyuki Fujita and Daiki Odashima.
And the next up was Naomi Chimura Fuji, Ada, and Shuji Kondo defeating Tetsuya Endo, Dragon Bane, and Alpha Wolf 8:45 with the Imperial Uno from Ada on Bane. I guess somewhat surprising of a result, but maybe we're going to set something up. But, you know, solid, but not enough time, I thought.
Yeah. No, I mean, they did set something up. Like, they set up the Ada and Kondo challenging for the junior titles. For the junior tag titles. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, solid match otherwise. Does Endo feel a little bit lost in the shuffle right now?
Yes, absolutely.
Because he's not even doing any, like, he left Team 2000X and then that never really was followed up on. Like, it doesn't seem like he has beef with them anymore.
No.
Like, they just kind of kicked him out and he was just like, okay, and just left.
I think Endo has potential to do something in the N1 big. But if they don't do that, then he's definitely lost in the shuffle. And then maybe he will just go back to
Yeah, because before I was like, maybe he like wins the N1 and then challenges Ozawa to like a one-on-one. But like now that Ozawa is no longer champion, it wouldn't make any sense for Endo to win the N1. So I don't, maybe he goes to the final, but I don't think it's a chance to win now.
Yeah. And then we had an elimination match. Jack Team 2000X, Jack Morris, Daga, Null, Tadasuke, and Iwata-san defeated Kaito Kiyomiya, Galeno, Harutoki, Alejandro, and Kai Fujimura 5-4. So Iwata-san eliminated Fujimura with a backslide. So another victory for him with those backslides. Mm-hmm. Kiyomiya defeated Tadasuke with the Shining Lancer. Null defeated Alejandro over the top rope. And then Null pinned Harutoki with the choke slam. That's so you want to get the monster heel. Some big wins like that. Kiyomiya eliminated Daga, then Galeno eliminated Morris with the Michinoku Driver 2. And then Null and Galeno both went over the top rope. Probably what you wanted to go there. And then Iwata-san threw Kiyomiya over the top rope. And look, I enjoyed this. It was like a little short on the shorter side for elimination match, but that also helped it just be all action and, and very little bullshit, I thought.
Yeah. No, I liked it as well. Maybe also to like note as well is like Iwata didn't just like throw Kiyomiya over the top rope like cleanly. Like Ozawa like interfered and like hit Kiyomiya with the real rebel, and then Iwata threw Kiyomiya over the top rope.
Yeah, but that was to set something up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So Ozawa then appeared to a huge pop when he appeared in the match. Still over, folks. Don't worry. he had then made the announcement that Iwata-san was going on his foreign excursion and that they would be facing each other in August on the farewell match, which is a match I'm looking forward to. Do you think that he's just going to punk Iwata-san out?
I feel like that's what's going to happen.
And he'll like leave Japan not being a member of Team 2000X anymore?
That one, I don't know. I do think he's still going. I think he's going to leave as a member of Team 2000X.
Yeah.
But I think maybe you use this to like establish some like tension between him and Ozawa, for example.
Right. So there was no announcement of where Iwata-san is going. I'm going to guess Europe, but I suppose you can't really rule out Orlando.
I mean, I guess maybe, but like, I don't know. That would be kind of weird if he just goes there too. And I don't think he really can like benefit from that really. So I mean, also, obviously, if he goes to Europe, I have better chances of seeing him live. So obviously, selfishly, that's obviously in my own self-interest if he comes here instead.
Yes.
Especially since Ozawa mainly like GWF was one of the like promotions he worked the most on his excursion.
Yeah.
So I feel like they have a good relationship there. So, and I mean, hey, and like, because that's the other thing, like, for example, like now Jack Morris has started working here too, like every single time he's back in Europe. So I feel like they have a good relationship. So I, my guess would still be that he's actually coming here. Like not just, I mean, not just specifically here, but also to like Europe in general.
And we forgot to mention on the last show, after Yohei won, the lights went out and then Hiromu came out from the stands and made the challenge. So we got this match, special tag match, Hiromu Takahashi and Amasaka defeating Yohei and Yuto Kikuchi in 10:56 with the time bomb from Hiromu on Yohei. This was a pretty good match. I thought that Hiromu and Yohei had great chemistry. And once this tag match was announced, I thought that this finish was pretty clear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no way Hiromu was going to lose this. That's for sure.
And guess what? We're getting a Hiromu versus Yohei match.
Which, I mean, I think Hiromu's going to win the title, right?
I mean,
we keep predicting that Yohei is going to lose the title on every single defense and then he just keeps defending the belt. But I feel like this time for sure has to be the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I think what he's got to hold that till January, right?
Probably, yeah. I mean, but will New Japan give him a, like, because like he's doing this also because he's not working the G1.
Yeah.
So like he has time to basically do this right now. But if he holds it to January again, like New Japan probably wants him involved like for like January 4th. So I don't know if he really like, I don't know, want him to like carry that belt for that long. But then I'm also like, who takes it off of him? That like that's the other problem. If you put it on him, like who takes it off of him? I guess.
That's what I was gonna guess.
I mean, ideally, I would want it to be a younger guy, but yeah,
sure.
that's probably not happening. So,
so then we go to the main event for the GHC Heavyweight Championship. Kenta defeated Kenno in 28:04 with a go to sleep to win the title. only for the second time, I believe.
Yeah. He only had that like super long. Was it super long? I don't. Yeah, but he only had like one title reign so far. Yeah, I was about to say it was about a year, right? Yeah, he kind of fucked up his
body
doing that.
Back to Morishima.
Yeah,
and so I mean, this match was great. But I will say, and it might still be the Noah match of the year, but I will say, let's be honest, folks. This was still worked in a way to cover up that Kenta cannot like run around furiously in the ring. Right? It was a little slow paced. However, it is a tribute to Kenta and Kenno how good they were that this drew you in immediately. And obviously there were sequences where they just kicked and slapped the absolute shit out of each other, especially in the closing stretch with all those slaps that Kenta was giving to Kenno. But I did think that this match was structured being like, yeah, Kenta can't move that fast for that much of the match type thing. That being said, they still did build a lot of drama and this was a great match, but I just had to put that in there because I think some people are just being like, oh, you know, match of the year or whatever like that. You know, I thought that it still moved a little slow for what you would think in this match. That being said, it was still probably a match of the year.
And I mean, like Kenta, like he's like not Kenta, like he's not the same guy obviously he was like 20 years ago. I mean, how could he be, obviously? But I feel like he has really figured out how he can work within his own limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So like I think that is such an important like thing that you need to be able to do as a wrestler as you get older and your body starts breaking down. Did you just need to know, okay, how can I maximize the skills I still have to put on a good match? And I think that's exactly what they did here, where he's like, well, I mean, I can still kick really hard and I can still like throw a really mean chop. So that's what we're going to do. So, I mean, I hope he never like, you know, gets to like the same level like that his mentor and name bodyguard, basically, where like the only thing he ever can do is chops. Like, I don't think he's that broken down, but I think it's pretty great. Let's see what he can do. Like, it was also such a feel-good moment, right? Like, that the crowd popped, like, so massively when Kenta actually won the title, because it just felt right. Because, I mean, in a way, he never really should have left, but, like, he kind of had to because the promotion was dying and they couldn't really pay him anymore. So he, like, went to the US. And then when he came back, like, he should have come back to Noah, but they couldn't afford him at the time. So he went to New Japan and very, very obviously now mailed it in completely his entire time there. But it still felt wrong for Kenta to not be, like, to be back in Japan and not be in Noah. For him to now be back in Noah and to, like, now actually, like, be the champion again with the promotion and a fairly healthy state now. Yeah, I don't know. It just feels right. And it was just, to me, like, it's not the match of the year, but I think it's definitely, like, the feel-good moment of the year.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Now, what do you think of this booking? I think one-day title reigns are preposterous and suspension of disbelief defying, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't really mind it, to be quite honest. It's also because it's Kenno, right? I think if you do this with anybody else, it kind of is bad. But, like, if you do it with Kenno, it works because of the way his character is, where he is just this, like, guy that, like, constantly feels like inadequate, and then kind of when he actually gets to the top, he, like, fucks up and then loses the title quickly. Like, that's basically what he is now. Like, where he is very obviously, like, positioned as a main eventer, but he's also positioned as the guy that, like, when he actually, like, wins the title, something happens and he just, like, either immediately or, like, really quickly, like, loses the title again. So, because it was done with him, I think it was fine. But I can see where you're coming from, where, like, it sucks a little bit to, like, only do, like, a one day, like, less than one day. It was, like, 16 hours or whatever, title reign. And for him to lose it.
15 hours, maybe, tops.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Kent is ostensibly a babyface, so he's just like, okay, well, I'll take advantage of
that. Yeah, but, like, what was he supposed to do? Like, he would, like, because that's the other thing. It's not like Kenta came in and challenged Kenno. Like, it's the opposite. Kenno was like, because Kenno was also the guy that proposed to do it the very next day. Like, this is very much Kenno falling on his own hubris yet again, where he's like, no, I'm Superman. I can defend the belt the very next day against Kenta. I can beat Kenta. I can show you that I'm better than you. And then, well, Kenta didn't have a fucking, like, title match the prior day, so he was just more rested. Like, he lost in the opener and on the prior show in a match where, honestly, he didn't do that much. So, that's why it actually kind of makes sense. Because, again, Kenta was just the more rested guy. So he, like, in 30 minutes, you know, like, he just had the stamina at the end to just get the best of Kenno. And Kenno, yet again, gets overconfident and fucks himself over like he always does. That's why he's such a lovable guy, because that, like, he just keeps doing that.
And then probably they went to this right away, because then Marufuji challenged.
I mean, you have to do that match. I mean, have the chance to do this, you have to do this match. I don't know how good it could be, but
and guess what? Cork and Hall on August 16th is already sold out.
Yeah. So you're thinking they're not going to get cold feet based on the number that they're drawing off of a Kenta versus Marufuji match again?
No.
They should have put that in the Budokan just as a fuck you.
So let's look. Okay, so August 11th, Colts Kawasaki. We've got Hiromu versus Yohei and Goshi Ozaki versus Harutoki. So, I mean, that's a decent, that's like 1,000+.
And you're going to sell that out with Hiromu there.
Yeah. And then on the 16th, we got Ozawa versus Owada-san and Kenta versus Marufuji, all that's been announced so far. Marufuji said, I'm only still wrestling because of you. Or that's how it was translated on commentary. Do you think that's a hint at something?
I think we're going to see a Marufuji retirement show next year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's very obviously, like, in a lot of pain. Like, I think it's probably time. And he has a backstage job as well. So I think it's just time for him to just hang up the boots and, like, become, like, an office guy, essentially.
Yeah. I think he won't be retiring in January because Tanahashi's going to do that.
Exactly. Like, they would have already announced that if he was retiring in January.
I mean, it would not shock me if he goes all the way to early 2027. But they announced it at the beginning of next year type thing.
Oh, like they did with Tanahashi. Yeah, I could see that too.
So, Noah, I think there's obviously some very interesting directions they could go. They pulled the plug on Ozawa's title reign at the right time, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that and this just leaves the N1 much more wide open and interesting.
Yeah. When do you think he's turning face?
By the end of the N1.
Yeah.
Some people thought that Kenta would turn.
Yeah, I thought that. Match.
And he did. That would have left too much of a bad taste on the 25th anniversary, I thought.
Sorry?
That would have left a bad taste in everyone's mouth because it's the 25th anniversary, I thought.
Yeah, in hindsight, that would have been really stupid. But I wouldn't have put it past them because it was like, I don't know, it would have been such a like clear transition like within a day, right? It's like you take it off of Ozawa and you put it on Kenta the next day and he's now, you know, you big like top heel. But yeah, I agree that like keeping it as a feel-good moment was the much better choice here.
So I would say that I think Noah's a little more interesting again because that title reign was getting a little... I mean, it's weird. Like the way I think it was always so weird because it's like so incredible. He is so incredible. They made a new star, but the formula was just not sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, like to me, it was still fine until the Kenta match and then they did the weird freeway with like... with Segura and Endo, yeah. And I don't think that really worked, but
that was
I agree. It was the right time to just like end it now and like before like the whole thing, like before you overexpose that, and then you can like basically. I feel like he's gonna win the title again. I mean, obviously he's gonna win the title again, but like he's gonna win it as a face like the next time he does, which. My guess would be January 1st.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. From Kenta?
I would think so, because I don't really see who else would make sense. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see who actually wins the N1, which I don't really have a good feeling on the pulse who like is going to win the N1 now. I guess Kaito? Question mark?
Oh.
So. That's basically the only two people I could see like hold that title then is like Kento or Kaito. I don't think Kenno. Maybe they do like Kenno wins the N1, beats Kenta, and then loses it. But I think that would be too quickly if you do Ozawa versus Kenno January 1st.
Yes, I agree.
So it really can only be Kento or Kaito. I think Kenta. I think they're gonna do the rematch Kenta versus Ozawa. January 1st and Ozawa beats him again.
That's probably if he's a face though.
Yeah, as a face. Yeah, that's the difference. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that is Noah. So we move on to All Japan Pro Wrestling. And so we've got a Taishi Nagao update and it's still not good because it sounds like he's still in the ICU.
Yeah, which it's been now, what, like 2 months basically?
I think so, yeah. Was this the end of May?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly when, like, but yeah, I think it was... No, I think his last match was in like late April, early May, right?
Yeah, geez.
So like the fact that he's still in the ICU now is a really, really bad sign. And mm-hmm. You'd expect him to be like transferred to like, I don't know, like, you know, like the regular ward for like recuperation by now. But the fact that he isn't is, yeah, that's not good. He still has to be like in intensive care.
Yeah. So, oh God, best wishes to him. And
Like at this point, like it might legitimately not even be a thing of like, can he ever return to ring? It might be more of like, can he have like, you know, like a comfortable life essentially.
Yeah. We'll see. I hope they can give us some more updates. We'll see, but you never, I don't know. I don't trust them to be completely honest.
Yeah. I mean, Japanese promotions are famously very like tight-lipped when it comes to things like this.
Yeah. So the next thing that we need to talk about is that friend of the show, Velky Bracha, who goes through financials of the pro companies when they come out. Basically, in the last fiscal year, All Japan lost 42 million yen, which I believe is like $282,000 American.
Yeah.
That is a huge spike because they lost like 500,000 yen in 2023 and 9 million yen in 2024. But we don't know what's going on because it could be a capital expense. And Fukuda is a businessman, so he could be moving money around with all of his businesses and everything like that. So I don't know. I mean, it is and isn't a lot of money. It is a lot of money for a company the size of All Japan, but it's also not some hole that you can't dig out of.
Yeah, and we don't actually know what, like, you know, what Fukuda's finances overall look like.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Like, how easily can he just, like, absorb a hit like this? Because, I mean, that's at the end of the day, it's, like, really the thing. It's, like, if he's just able and willing to, like, take that kind of hit, then it's fine. But, I mean, it's kind of weird that it is that much more, right? Like, it can't just be explained because the attendance grew as well.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really make sense that, like, losses grew by that much. There had to be something that caused that. I mean, I've actually seen some suggestions as well that it's like basically loans coming due that were taken up during the pandemic. And that's what like made the losses grow so much. So,
yeah,
which would make sense. Like, I think that kind of works out time frame wise. So, yeah, hopefully there's not more like debt that needs to be paid off. Like, hopefully maybe it was just like one big chunk and they were just like, okay, we're just going to take the hit and just pay it off. Because I don't think it would be sustainable for them to like keep eating those kind of losses. Like the one from last year, I think that one is something they can keep eating for a while. But like these kinds of losses, I don't think, like, if they have to do that like a couple of years, that's going to be really bad for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know what to make of it for now. I mean, it's something to keep your eye on and everything like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could also be like they renovated the dojo, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's straight up is what it also could be, where like they renovated the dojo and that was just a massive expense that they just ate that like last year.
Yeah. So we'll keep watching that. Although I should note that they still have not returned to pre-pandemic touring schedule.
No.
Which, I mean, I got to assume that that ultimately does hurt them. Or what do you think? Do you think they'd have bigger losses if they were doing more small 300-person shows?
Depends, like, what their travel expenses are.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe you could do, like, a tour with, like, a bit of a pared-down roster. You put some, like, locals on there. I don't know. I think they could do it. I think they definitely should be trying to like run more shows, like especially in areas where maybe like other promotions don't go to or don't go to anymore.
Yeah. Right. They still, I mean, this is what they're going to go do the week long Hokkaido tour again for the third year. So, I mean, I'm assuming that that's making money.
Yeah. And like, because like, for example, like Big Japan is like the only like promotion that really like draws Shikoku. And they generally draw some really big numbers there because, again, they're like the only promotion that runs that entire island, essentially.
I mean, I think that's what they got to do, but we'll see.
And you could probably, I mean, fuck, you could probably get yourself some money from the government to like be like local. We do like local revitalization by like going to like middle of absolutely nowhere where like nothing ever happens. So like literally All Japan coming to town is like the most exciting thing that has happened in the town in like 2 years.
Yeah. So we go to the July 17th show at Corken Hall and only 855 fans, which is their lowest Corken number in ages.
Yep.
And this was main evented by Seki Yoshioka versus Ryuji Hayato. But I would also note that the last couple times they tried to main event the juniors in Corken in October 2022, they drew 822 for Atsuki versus Ryuji Hayato. And then in March 2024, they drew 1,076 for Dan versus Rising Hayato. So from that perspective, I would say that this is definitely not good.
No. I mean, we kind of said this like last week. Like All Japan basically told their fans to not come to the Skurken show.
Yeah.
Because they were like, Anzai is going to be gone. And like, we're going to put the Triple Crown match in Osaka and we're main eventing the show with a bunch of juniors. Like,
and the,
not exactly.
The tag title match is third from the top.
Yeah, third from the top. And it's Hokuto Omori and Talos. Like, it's a team challenging that you know is not going to win. Yeah. Like, it's literally like a paper, like, it's literally a paper defense. So, yeah, I can't be like, again, this to me was like, it's a promotion for some reason telegraphing to its fans, like, don't bother spending money on this one. Like, save up money for the next one, I guess.
So, Let's begin. In Block B for the Junior Battle of Glory, Dan Tamer defeated Fuminori Abe at 10-11 with De La Magistral. And Paul, let me tell you, Dan La Magistral, very smooth, much smoother than you might think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because he's kind of a power guy, but I think he's underrated as a, like, mat wrestler.
Oh, for sure. This was a solid match. And I'm going to preface this. I don't necessarily have a ton to say about these Junior Battle of Glory matches because, okay, spoiler alert, I think the main event of this show was the best tournament match so far. But I would argue that there's a decent floor to all of these matches.
Yeah, like none of them are bad. I think they're all incredibly solid as fuck. I think it helps that they are no longer have this like artificial time limit to them either. So they actually have like able to like give these matches some like breathing room. I will actually disagree that the main event from this show was the best tournament match so far, because I actually think the next match was the best tournament match.
Okay. And Block A, Hikaru Sato defeated Ryo Inoue in 218 with the heel hold. Paul, take it away then.
So I thought this was absolutely awesome. So basically, like, Inoue comes out like, and he looks like super focused, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna like make a big impact. And like he like rushes down Sato, and they just like start like wildly like brawling like everywhere. Like just beat the shit out of each other. And then like Sato, like finally, like he kind of like manages to like kind of like get in, like, because you can see Sato doesn't actually want to like stand up to stand up with like Inoue. So he like tries to like get him to the ground, and he finally like manages to like get him like on the ground, and then immediately just like locks in a heel hold and just taps him out in 2 minutes. And then after the match, like, A, it makes Sato look like a complete killer. I think it established really well, like, Inoue's, like, underdog position in the tournament, because it's, like, a thing that, like, keeps happening to him, where, like, he's really motivated, but then he just keeps getting caught by the people that are, like, just more experienced than him. And then afterwards as well, like, he, like, got, like, the ice pack, right, to, like, and he's, like, limping back to, like, the back, and he just, like, tosses the ice pack, like, on the floor in, like, frustration. I thought this was just like, this was about as perfect as it can do, like a quick squash like this. I mean, I wouldn't even call it a squash really, because like Inoue was like the equal of Sato, and then Sato just got the better of him on the ground where he's better. But like that's exactly how you do a sprint like this in a tournament. I thought this was great.
I mean, yes, it was a great like 2 minute match like that, and a good sort of establishing thing for Inoue just being like, is he going to be the cocky young guy that's just going to fall flat on his face? We shall see. Next up, we had Hideki Suzuki, Kengo Mashimo, and Seigo Tachibana defeating Kumaresh, Takashi, and Shota Kafuji, who's back yet again, which is a good sign, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. 7-10 when Suzuki pinned Kofuji with the sleeper hold and then went for the pin type thing. Perfectly solid match, I thought. I am the top Kofuji booster, though, too.
I feel like they're gonna like basically slot him into like the Taisha Nagao role now.
Yeah, that's what I suspect. And then Ryuki Honda, Davey Boy Smith Jr., Shotaro Ashino, and Rena Abe defeated Jun Seto, Rei Seto, Musashi, Yuko Miyamoto in 11-24 with a death roulette for my Abe on Musashi. Paul, I thought this was pretty good actually, but I'll get to the big reason why. It was a standard like multi-man tag him anyways, but I thought Honda, trying to build for his match against Jun, he was so good here, and all he was obsessed with was fighting Jun.
Oh yeah, no, he I thought this
everywhere
was great.
And brawled everything, and Honda is just really delivered here.
Yeah, like after this match, I had much more of a feeling like, oh, maybe Honda actually has a chance of winning now, because yeah, him and just Jun like going at each other like in the like upper stands, like in Kurken, like in the bleachers, like after the match. We're basically like, they didn't give a shit at all that the match was over. They were like, no, we're just going to keep brawling. Thought that was awesome. And
yes.
Yeah, otherwise, I also thought it was like a decent enough match otherwise. But like that was very clearly the highlight of the entire thing.
We will get to the Royal Road announcement later after we do the shows. So then we jump to the World Tag Team title. Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi defeated Hokuto Omori in Talos in 17-15 when Aoyagi pinned Omori with The Fool. Paul, I'll be nice and say that the last couple of minutes against this between Yuma and Hokuto were decent to good. I think that Yuma is Hokuto's best opponent when they decide to actually try. I would dare say, if spoiler alert, Yuma becomes Triple Crown champion, that they run this, they run a Hokuto title challenge. But however, the first like at least 10 minutes of this was what you thought it was going to, with a bunch of selling and comedy, selling by the business tag, and then comedy, and then Talos.
Yeah,
now, I don't know if this is by design or what, or he's actually as limited as we think he is, but I feel like they don't let Talos do that much.
Yeah, no. They very clearly are limiting like what Talos is like actually allowed to do.
And so, is that because they want to like keep the monster aura, or they think he sucks? I can't tell.
Could be both. Talos
kind of it's not like Talos jumps off the page as some incredible monster, but I feel like he's fairly competent in what they have him actually.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah.
Right. It's like, well, I don't see that they put Talos in some position where he's in over his head, but I don't feel like they give him that opportunity to show beyond a big boot and a chokeslam what he can
do. Yeah. I mean, but that might also be all he can do.
Yeah. I mean, that's very real possibility too. Although I suppose one other thing I will say positive this match, Kento and Yuma trying to get like Talos down on his knees was sort of entertaining too.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's always a good thing when you like try to like cut the giant down to size, right? Like, I think that's always a spot that works pretty well in wrestling. But I do agree with you though, that like, I actually thought that like the ending of, or the, not the ending, but like the final sequence with Hokuto and like Yuma was like really, really good though, because again, Hokuto is a really good tag worker. Like he's an okay singles worker, but I do think he is actually like a really, really good tag worker. And he shows that every single time he's put in a big match like that.
Yeah. But then they just have him do all that other stuff all the other times.
Yes, that's the problem. And then he has like pretty meh singles matches as well. So that doesn't help either.
And then Hideki came out to challenge. And then he revealed that his partner would be going to be Kengo Mashimo.
Which, yeah.
Should be good. That will be on August 3rd. We need to talk about that show when we get to it. So next up in the B block of Junior Battle of Glory, Atsuki Aoyagi defeated Naruki Doi in 1744 with a Bakatari sliding kick cutback cradle. I think this went a little too long though. Like it was technically good, but like not, I don't know.
Yeah, I did like the finish though. I did like the finish.
Yeah,
I agree that you probably could have cut like 5 minutes off of this, but I did really like the finish of just like Atsuki just ducking under the Bakatari and then just rolling him up. Yeah, but I will say the finish was kind of the most notable thing about the match. Yeah,
because it was the length, I would say that this is like in some ways one of the weaker, if not the match.
On the first show, yeah, I would say, on the first show, I think it was the weakest like of the tournament matches.
Yeah. However, we're going to go to the main event with Rising Hayato defeating Seki Yoshioka in the A block. And this was great. And the match of the show, and I think the match of the tournament.
No, I agree. It was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It did not overstay its welcome. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, there were it's funny with Hayato because I think he's ebbed and flowed. I'm like, okay, this guy, he's getting good. And then I felt like he even after he went to the like the punk rocker look, he had plateaued for a while. But I would think that once he got into the tag team with the Anzai, like he was like, okay, he's getting great again. And he's been great since then. And this was in a really strong main event, even if it was like a paradoxical main event because these guys can't draw, to be completely honest. But it was a good way to end the show, right? And you had the right guy win in the main event of a Cork, and if you're going to main event it with the juniors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and especially you want like your junior champion in that main event as well if you're doing this tournament. And like the guy that is technically, I guess, the biggest star in the junior division, because he will also just held like a title with your ace for a while.
Yeah.
So, I do see why they were like, we're going to main event with this one. And I mean, it was a really great match. It's just, you know, it didn't draw.
No. So then we go to the 20th of July at Wolf Heart Toyoma in front of 417 fans. I'm just going to list off the tournament matches. Mr. Saito Naruki Doi in the Blee Block defeated Dan Tamer in 927 with the V9 clutch. I actually thought this was pretty good. I was like, are these two going to work together? Because wasn't their title match not that good?
They had a title. I think that was in Doi's second reign. They had a title match that was, or was it in Dan's reign? I don't remember, but like, I definitely remember that they had a title match that I was really excited for, and I was just very meh. And this was this was better than that for sure.
Yes, this was definitely better than that. That I think in part because, you know, keep it 927, the length helped and everything like that. And then we had an A block Rio Inoue defeating Rising Hado in 935 with the Daikannon suplex hold, which I think this might be the second best match in the tournament. You know, Inoue sort of brought the fire again, but he actually got the best of Hayato for once. Mm-hmm. He learned something out of 2 minutes type thing. So I would, Paul, I briefly glanced at this six-man title match, but it was Hokuto Mori, Kumarashi, and Takashi defeating Toyama Black Ramen Man number one, Toyama Black Ramen Man number two, and Toyama Black Ramen Man number three. Mm-hmm. And the Black Ramen Men were Hideki, Yuma, Aoyagi, and Fuminori Abe.
Shoot trash. How dare you just unmask them like that?
Yes, I know. And now, this was when I was like, oh, God, Yuma is not going to change. However, we can debate that on subsequent shows.
I will say I basically, like, when this match started, I started playing Persona 4 and I beat the final boss before the match was over. So at least I did something.
And then Block A for the J-Bog. Seki Yoshioka defeated Seigo Tachibana in 1208 with the Lob Magistral. And again, how could you go wrong with Yoshioka and Tachibana?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. I mean, they're both pretty, like, again, they're both incredibly underrated. So, yes. And they kind of showed that here, where it's like, nah, this was just really good action from start to finish.
And then in the main event, Musashi defeated Atsuki Aoyagi in 1656 with the Nitten Ichiru. I thought this was pretty good, too. A much better outing for Atsuki this time, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, like, it's also weird because, like, it was only slightly shorter than the Doi match, but, like, it didn't feel that long. Like, it had, like, a really good pace to it. I think, yeah, I don't know, like, I think maybe he just has better chemistry with Musashi. That might also be a thing. I think Musashi was also seemed, like, incredibly motivated here as well. So I think that helped the match as well. And, yeah, no, I thought this was just a really good, like, I'm not going to put on any match of the year list or whatever, but, like, I think overall this show, like it just kind of flew by. I think I really enjoyed this one, like, minus the, like, All Japan, like, the six-man tag title match, the comedy match, which half of the match was spent eating ramen. everything else, I think, like, you can go and watch and, like, you're not going to, like, waste your time.
Yeah. So we move on to Summer Action Series 2025 on July 21st at Edeon Arena, Osaka number 2, in front of 795 fans. And Paul, I thought that's a bit of a disappointing number.
Yep. Again, I looked at it. Triple Crown matches do not draw in Osaka.
No.
Like, they don't do them that often. They generally main event these shows with, like, world title matches. Like, what they generally do is they do the Triple Crown match in Tokyo, and then they do the World Tag title match in Osaka. And I guess the Osaka fans don't care for the Triple Crown. They're conditioned to watching World Tag title matches. So they didn't show up for this one, I guess.
Well, Paul, I mean, outside of Sendai area, is it possible, and outside of maybe Tokyo, is it possible that the Saitos are just, or Jun Saito as champions, just not hot? Like a lot of international fans think?
That might be the case. I'm really curious, like, what he draws. I mean, to be fair, but that's back in... But that might be the case. Yeah, maybe they just see June as this, like, country bumpkin from Sendai. Well, not even from Sendai, like, from, like, Miyagi Prefecture.
Yeah.
Like, somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Miyagi Prefecture. So that might be that they just don't. And again, that might legitimately just be the thing, where, like, they just don't give a shit about him and they don't show up for his, like, title matches then. But, like, he's a big star at home and in Tokyo. I mean, to be fair, but if you're a big star in Tokyo, that's kind of like you're 60% there in Japan.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. So we start with Block B. Mr. Sadanuki Doi defeated Fuminori Abe in 909 via pinfall. Solid opener. I feel like Doi's effort level varies, but I thought that, especially when you're talking about lower on the card, but I thought Abe kept this together.
I mean, Abe is, like, the perfect guy for, like, these kinds of matches.
Yeah. So
I think he just also has a style where, like, even if the opponent wants to mail it in, Like, I think he is enough to like carry the match by himself.
Yeah. And then next up, we had Seigo Tachibana defeating Ryo Inoue in 10 minutes exactly with the Yankee Hammer to finally get Tachibana some points. And again, you know, this is a very good 10-minute match, right? Like, this is like what you're going to get in this tournament. Just solid, good work, right?
Yeah. And again, it's like one of those where like Inoue, you know, like comes in like a house of fire, but then Tachibana is just the more experienced guy. So he gets him in the end.
I mean, in a way, he's looking really sleazy these days, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He definitely is, like, sleazing it up with, like, his jacket and, like, he's, like, growing out his hair and everything.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I didn't watch this, but it was Hideki Suzuki, Seki Yoshioka, and Asuki Aoyagi defeating Rei Saito, Yasufumi Nakanoue, and Aran Sano in 8:37 when Suzuki used the backdrop hold on Sano. Did you see it?
I did watch the whole show, so I had to have seen it. I have zero memory of this match.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure it was what it was, you know. Interesting booking for Nakanoue back in All Japan, though.
Yeah.
Triple Crown next challenger decision match. Yuma Aoyagi defeated Davey Boy Smith Jr. in 9:38. And also very interesting that this is only like the fourth match on an eight match show. And he won with the endgame submission. Paul, this was good. And this was a different Yuma. Yuma showed fire. He like charged and drop kicked Smith at the beginning. And then they just went in. And then very quickly, Smith sat in some or did some holds. But then it was just like go, go, go. Suplexes. And then Yuma twice reversed out of the bulldog bomb attempt. And on the second time, he got him in a front neck lock. And then when Smith went down, he transitioned into the end game to get the submission. And I thought that this was a good Davey Boy Smith Jr. singles match, also reinvigorated Yuma.
It definitely wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, because I was not going to lie, I was dreading this match a little bit. Yeah, it really helped that Yuma just kept it serious. And it did feel like Smith seemed motivated, like, because I think with Smith, the problem also is like, he's like his effort levels in general aren't that great, but they're like through the floor when he's losing, generally speaking. Yeah. So, but like that wasn't really the case here. Like, I think he actually like tried for once. And so, yeah, again, not a match I'm going to put on like any like match of the year list, but definitely like solid wrestling and much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And you know, it was the right decision because, well, we'll get into that in a minute about when this is going to happen and everything like that. So then we move on to Hokuto Omori, Kumo Rashi, Takashi, and Talos defeating Kento Miyahara, Shotaro Shino, Renai Abin, Shota Kofuji in 17:22 with the Ride the Lightning Daddy from Talos on Kofuji. Paul, did you watch this? Because I did not.
Yeah, I watched it. I mean, it was solid.
It's long.
I mean, it was quite long. That's the one thing I would say. Like it. I mean, it was mostly like a lot of like Hokutogon shtick as well. Talos, they don't really let him do a lot of stuff. Like that was pretty clear here as well, where like he like did his usual spots, but then not that much beside that. And Takashi is still like super fucking over. Yeah, that's really all you can say for this match, to be quite honest. But also, like now with Elpida gone, Renayaba is just completely lost in the shuffle now. Like he is just nothing. He's just a non-entity basically on the roster at this time.
Well, is that the worst thing? I don't know. I feel like they
No, it's not.
They already started to pull back on him. They gave him the opportunity with the Royal Road and everything. And actually the funny thing was I thought he performed well in that Royal Road final in that Triple Crown match. You know, I think you could pump the brakes on him for a while. It's not like they're having him job out all the time either. He's still somewhat protected. All right, we're back. Sorry about that. We just had a little bit of technical difficulties. But we were talking about this. We're talking about Renai Abe.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and needless to say, yeah, he's fine where he is.
Yeah, I think it's actually, yeah.
Is the short version of it, you know. But they have pulled back on him, which I think probably was for the best.
Yeah.
So Block A. Rising Hado defeated Hikaru Sato on 11:27 with the Sid Vicious. And this was sort of like, how would I put it, what you would expect the Rising Hado versus Hikaru Sato match to be. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah, basically exactly what you thought this was going to be, where like Sato's like very much like trying to keep Fix on the ground, and then Hayato very much is like, no, we're going to wrestle my match instead. And then ultimately, I mean, Sato really has been deep pushed now, right? Like,
yeah. Again, nice little like 3.75 match, like the floor of the tournament. I'm sure like someone's going to yell about this Hayato selling of his leg.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. And then Block B, Dan Tamer defeated Musashi in 12:28 with the lariat. Oh, big lariat, I got to say, too. And I thought that this was very good. I feel like Musashi has really stepped up his game since joining All Japan, because he's always a little bit hit and miss, but he has become very consistent.
I mean, it helps to be like in a bigger promotion, right? Like, it's.
Yeah.
I think he kind of rightly sees this as like the big chance for his career, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I think like he's just like, he has an incredibly high floor now. And yeah, I thought this was awesome as well. Like, I think Dan, yeah, I've really liked in the tournament as well, where he just like, like he's finally leaning into like this Power Junior thing. So like he's finally going all in on that. And like this, the lariat, like he just destroyed Musashi with that one. That was insane. So yeah, no, I've been enjoying like Dan's output like in this tournament.
For sure. And then for the main event, for the Triple Crown, Jun Sato defeated Ryuki Hanada in 22:39 with the Days Gone. Paul, I think this is the best match of Jun's title reign.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because I predicted that it very well might be, because I just thought that, okay, Honda and them just going to go in there and blast each other, and they did.
Yeah, I will still say I'm probably going to be the low man on this, I guess. Like, I agree it was the best match of the rain so far, but it still wasn't like, I still didn't think it was like a blowaway match either. Like, I would still say it was like a below average Triple Crown match. Like, it wasn't a bad match, but it was just,
it was below average Triple Crown. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I do agree it was the best match of the rain, because I think Honda actually, like, yeah, he's really good at like getting something out of Jun there, where he just like forces him to like, you know, be more energetic and actually like try to be like, you know, like a big guy, because Honda is like, I mean, Honda isn't small, but he's obviously much smaller than Jun, so he can't really like let himself get like upstaged by Honda on like, you know, like power and everything. So he has to like do that a lot more, and like the intensity as well. So no, I did enjoy it. It's just, you know, it's not quite what I want out of Triple Crown matches.
That's fair. If you sort of look at even just like the Kento era, absolutely below average. But I did like it for what it was. I said in the VOW Discord, they should just say fuck it and have Honda win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be the exact juice that the company needs.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess we're getting Yuma. I mean, it depends what kind of Yuma we'll get, but like, I at least have a higher chance of like getting good Triple Crown matches again.
Yeah. So, okay. So one thing, we'll just make a note of this on the Bayouden show today. That's the Misaki Mochizuki Protos. They had the AJPW six-man tag team title match, which was Hokuto Morikuma Rashi Takashi defeating Yamato, Vibu Hulk, and Susumu Yokosuka in 17:15 with the cyber bomb from Takashi on Yokosuka. I want to see this match because technically, Paul, it might be one of the best, if not the best, six-man title matches, depending on what happens.
Yeah. I mean, if Yamato is motivated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Susumu as well. Yeah. I mean, BB Hulk these days is, pretty broken down. But yeah, I mean, it has the chance to at least be good. Yeah. I mean, the opener on that one, I think, might be interesting as well, which was Daga and Owada-san defeating Masaki Mochizuki and Tominaga-san.
Yes, with the sharpshooter from Daga on Tominaga get the win. So both Noah and All Japan on this show. Now look, if Mochi is not getting booked in Noah anymore, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
We got a couple shows coming up that we need to talk about, because very interesting booking decisions going on. But first, let's do the Royal Road lineup. So we have Rei Saito, X. We'll talk about who X could be later. Yuma Aoyagi and, drum roll, Naoya Nomura returns. Paul, I feel like I should also be excited, but I also need to temper my expectations, because
yes, I don't know what's going to happen. Again, like, I love him, but like, just have to be realistic. Like, he's never going to be what he maybe potentially could have been.
I mean, like, he looked pretty good in those Noah shots that he did.
Yes, I mean, he looked really good last time too. And then he got, yeah, like, that's the thing, you can't, like, his body, it just isn't built to, like, you know, wrestle for very long, unfortunately. So I'll enjoy him while he's here, but also be very clear that he might be gone in 3 months.
So we'll jump back a bit to the August 3rd Ota War Gym Show. He's also on that show facing Ryuki Honda, which, my God, that could be a great match.
And that was supposed to be him versus Axe at first, which is interesting that they changed that.
Yeah. Do you think he's in it beyond that Ota Ward and the Royal Road?
I feel like if you're putting him in the tournament, yeah, I could see him beat Yuma. Like, I could even, I don't know, I don't know how much they trust him, but if Yuma is champion, I think Yuma at least wants to have one Triple Crown match with Nomura.
Absolutely. Look, I don't think Nomura is the worst choice to win this tournament if they have commitment from him.
I don't think he's going to win it, but I do think he's like, because he just needs to beat Yuma here, right, to get a title shot.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got Kento Miyahara versus Kengo Mashimo. These are all round one matches. Shotaro Ashino versus David Boy Smith Jr. And I'm sorry, poor Ashino. I think David was winning this because Ashino beat him in the Champion Carnival. So yeah. Ashino's going out in round one, I think.
Yeah.
Then we got Hideki Suzuki versus Odyssey. Oh boy. Who was announced with Zion in a video on the Korakuen show. But I thought we'd talk about him once we get to the listing of this. Oh God. This is all Hideki, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. It's like his buddies from NXT.
Because they were there both at the same time. Actually, honestly, for five years.
Yeah, yeah. So he would have been there, at the same time.
Well, obviously, look, these companies in Japan generally don't give a shit about any allegations about anyone.
Yeah.
The only time that's ever happened was maybe they got New Japan stopped from bringing Marty Scurll back in, but that's because the foreign talent rebelled.
Yes, and also...
And that was also because that was in the States, because they were bringing him for a strong team demo.
Yes, and New Japan also actually, like, you know, cares about, like, their, like, international fan base, whereas I don't really know if All Japan is aware that, like, international fans of All Japan exist.
You know, it's funny, because also when there was some WWE star, and I can't remember if it was Brian Kendrick. For some reason, I think it might have been, but I don't think it was. But it was someone was facing allegations and was, like, you know, making an apology on a tweet. And then Hideki just quotes the tweet and says, "Hello, my friend." This is like a couple years back.
Oh, man.
So, you know, so, I mean, it is what it is. I've never actually even seen Odyssey wrestle, so I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, same. Like, I had long stopped watching WWE by that
He's
point.
A member of Havoc with Zion and Ashino. And he's going over here.
Yeah. I did actually see him wrestle once because I watched the fourth rope GCW Heels Have Eyes for the Culture 2025 show.
Okay.
And he was like in like the battle royal there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. He was the big. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He was the big guy that came out, and he was like eliminated like immediately as well.
Really? Okay. So yeah, I have no idea, and it does not make All Japan look good.
No, it does not.
You know, Skrull's coming into heat up.
I mean, that just kind of says everything you need to know. Where it's like he can't even get booked by like All Japan. Like he gets booked by
Heat Up. See. You know, it's funny. I will say I'm not concerned that X is Marty Scurll because Marty Scurll is too small.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Japan. No. They'd be like, so no, we already, our junior tournament is already ongoing. We don't need you for that. Thanks.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure we don't have to worry about that. Then we have Ryuki Honda versus Kuma Arashi. Hokuto Mori versus Zion. And I'm going to say, I think Zion's winning that.
Yeah.
And then June Saito versus Ren Abe, and I'm going to assume that June's going to win that too. So
yeah,
the last year's winner goes out in the first round. Although I guess Abe not totally ruling out. I'm assuming Ray's going out in the first round too to X. Paul, who do you think X is? Is it a foreigner?
I know. I would say no.
Paul, is X Masato Tanaka?
Yeah, That's actually a pretty decent guess.
Okay, yeah. But here's the catch, Paul. X is on the August 3rd show, and that is the show the same day of Hayabusa versus Masato Tanaka. However, 01 show starts at noon. The All Japan show starts at 3 p.m., and it's about a 33-minute drive from Shinkiba to Oda Ward Gymnasium.
Can absolutely make that in time.
And that 01 show is only a 5-match show. It will be 2.5 hours tops.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, to drive. But let's say, because they're like, Shinkiba is also right next to the station, right? And if you just go from there to the Oda Ward Gym, I mean, go by train. I mean, yeah, that's about an hour by train. I mean, it probably is going to drive because that is much faster. But yeah, I think most likely.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah, because like who else would it? Because I don't think it's a foreigner, because why would you axe the foreigner? Like, you already just brought in Odyssey. Why would you bring in a different foreigner as axe? Like, that doesn't make any sense unless that's like somebody that the audience would know.
And yeah.
I don't know who Cyrus.
Yeah, you know what? That's very possible too.
But I don't think it's a foreigner. I think it's a Japanese guy.
Oh, but
guy,
he's teaming with Davey Boy Smith Jr. Against Ogoto Gun. Unless he's like, you kicked me out for Talos. I don't know.
That might actually, yeah. You know what? Actually, it might be Cyrus then.
Okay, so we got to go through some other possible exes. Kojima.
Obviously, like, he always has to be the favorite there, like the largest X in history. I do think he is legitimately a possibility. I don't think it's likely, but I do think it's possible at some.
And Madoka Kakuta.
And maybe would unless they ask him? Maybe, but yeah, why would they X him? Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Just a thought. Another Dragon Gate guy.
Maybe, but who would that? Like, it would have to be a larger guy as well. Like, especially if, I mean, I guess technically the Royal Road is, yeah. Nah, like who knows whatever is like up with him. I don't think.
No, I mean, they don't have Shimizu to send them.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, and otherwise, like, the only other guy would be Kakuta, or it would be like Shun Skywalker that are like large enough. They're not Kai, maybe, but why would you ex Kai?
And he was just there.
Yeah.
Lost. So I don't know. So yeah, those are the ones off the top of my head.
Sekimoto, but again, why would you? Well, maybe if they announce Sekimoto has joined All Japan.
Yeah.
You know, like, in case, like, I don't think that's really the case, but like, if he, like, let's say, like, they signed him, then maybe it would make sense to like X him here, to be like, yeah, here's the newest member of our roster. It's Daisuke Sekimoto.
Yeah. Those are the I don't know, those are the most realistic possibilities in my head.
Yeah.
So let's go over this Oda Ward Gym card. Saito Brothers versus Havoc. Jun Saito, Rei Saito, and Senor Saito versus Shotaro Shido, Zion, and Odyssey. And I think we can tell what's going to happen here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Odyssey is going to win. Like, because, like, Wilds bring him in, right? Like, he has to win, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then Hokuto Omori and Arashi versus Davey Boy Smith Jr. and X.
I mean, it's also obviously, like, Davey Boy and X are going to win because...
I mean, if it's Cyrus, he's going to pin Hokuto.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's no way he pins Arashi. He's definitely pinning Hokuto. Actually, in that case, wouldn't Hokuto kind of have a chance of maybe... I don't remember which block. Is he in the same block as X? I don't know if he is. But I think they wouldn't even be able to meet each other until the semifinal. And I don't think they want to put either Hokuto or Cyrus in the final. Yeah.
Yeah, because You got to have all four guys in the final be somewhat credible, because it's the semis and the finals in the same show at Cork.
Yeah.
So you got to have like all four guys be draw or of some kind. Right. So then Gator TV title. Oh God. Takashi versus Kurishio Tokyo, Japan.
Yeah. That's going to be something. That could be a candidate for like worst match of like All Japan's worst match of the year.
Oh,
actually, no, wait, no, yeah, wait, shit, I just saw the next match. Never mind, I'll take that back.
Because we got a Midsummer Special Singles Match Volume 1, Rena Abe versus Talos.
I mean, you know the concept of a Midsummer's Dream, so this match will bring you to a dream because it will probably put you to sleep.
It's so ridiculous, I'm curious.
I mean, Talos will have to do more, right? Like just by necessity of it being a singles match.
Yeah, and then we've got the Midsummer Special Singles Match Volume 2, Ryuki Honda versus Naoya Nomura. Get into it.
Yeah, no, that like why do these two matches get the same like labeling, but they couldn't be further apart in terms of like
I am good so they're gonna be, because these are two guys, you know, Honda came in after Nomura's neck injury, and they have, I don't even know if they've wrestled, even though they have been on later shows when Nomura came back briefly. But this is real fresh and real exciting, I think.
Oh yeah, no, this is gonna rock. Like they're gonna go super fucking hard.
Yeah. And I would assume Nomura is gonna win.
Probably, yes. Yeah, especially if they want to build him up for like a title match. Yeah.
Yeah. Honda can both be beaten by anyone and even beat a main eventer.
Yeah.
Any kind of guy. And then World Tag Team title, Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi versus Hideki Suzuki and Kengo Mashimo, which, you know, I would say would be my second most eagerly awaited match on this show. I think that's safe to say.
So you think Suzuki and Kengo are winning?
I don't think it's impossible, but I think they're going to give Yuma all of the titles.
Oh, yeah. So he's going to be like the All Asia Tag Title Champ, the World Tag Title Champ, and the Triple Crown Champ. I mean, then he should just come out with like the original Triple Crown, just all of the belts.
I don't think that anyone has held both the World, the Triple Crown, and
the All Asia
Tag Titles since Misawa briefly did it, because I'm pretty sure he was Triple Crown champion. And then he won the world titles and all Asia titles with Ogawa beating No Fear in 1999. And then
that sounds correct. All Asia
titles.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone has done it since then. And but this is a little because he's got two different partners with the belts.
Oh, yeah. Let me check real quick. But actually, because we haven't talked about that yet, what do you think of the design? But you're also correct. Yeah, he was it? Does that work out timing wise? Yeah, you are correct. Yeah,
he was between Vader Reigns.
Yeah.
But
how do you like the design of the new belts? I think they're actually good.
Yeah, I'm glad they kept basically the two belts and kept the, you know, the PWF tag and NWA International tag designs on each one. So I think that's
great. They just kind of modernized the design, but they kept like the same style and everything.
Yeah.
And like it feels like because I was kind of afraid they're gonna like do like some unnecessary like modernization to like the face plates and everything, and they didn't do that. Like they kept the same vibes. They just were like, yeah, these like the old belts had just reached the end of their life. Like I don't think they were like savable, so they're probably gonna like put them up now. And like I mean, if anything, like they might put, because Corrigan has kind of like a showcase for like old belts as well. I think that's maybe where they like end up, actually.
Yeah. Now, could Suzuki and Kengo win? I don't think so. I think the Saito's coming for those belts later this year, which is
the
singles division and back to the world tag titles.
Which, to be honest, I think they're much better at.
Yes, absolutely. And then in the main event of the show, we've got the Junior Battle of Glory finals. But wait, Paul, there's more. Because... On the 10th, they're in Matsumoto, which is Yuma Aoyagi's hometown. And that's where the Triple Crown match is happening. And if I am correct, this is a 6,000-seat arena in Matsumoto.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's going to be that many big arenas in Matsumoto.
Which leads me to believe that Atsuki's winning this tournament.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the Triple Crown.
No, Atsuki's winning the junior battle.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
That's why he's going to challenge for the junior title also in his hometown.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, yeah. So you have, like, basically both brothers, like, hold, like, all of the belts, essentially, by the end of the show.
Yep. Dan was someone I was like, maybe he'll be a finalist. He's in Block B with Atsuki, so it's got to be Atsuki versus Rising Hayato, especially if they're going to main event this Oda Ward.
Yeah. I mean, like, you have, like, that's, like, the biggest possible junior match you can make. Because I don't know what this will draw otherwise.
Well, I was just going to, that was my next topic of conversation. Does this break 1,500?
I don't think so. Like, it's just, juniors so just have never been a draw in All Japan.
No, and it's, look, there's a tag title match and there's an X, but it's still not enough of an undercard.
No. Like, I mean, I like Hideki and Kengo, but, like, that's not exactly, like, a drawing, like, challenger team either. And then...
I'm on the loss. Yeah. Oof, Paul.
Oh, no.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't know if it'll be a disaster, I think they're going to get 1,000 people, but here's the thing. All the premium seats, the special ringside and the ringside are not sold out. They usually do sell out.
That's bad.
They usually sell out on the Corkins, even when the Corkins draw like shit.
Yeah, because I think they generally sell, because I think like the same way as New Japan does, they do like a lottery for like the fan club first. Like, so generally don't have a chance to even buy these in like public sale. Like then generally not even available.
Yeah.
So that's a bad sign. Yeah.
Now, what is a slight slimmer of hope is that the reserved arena seats and the second floor stand seats, so the cheap sheet seats, and then the reserved seats on the floor, other than like the, you know, front row stuff. They have also triangles. So some of those have also moved.
But I mean, that might also be like how many of these did they even like open up, you know?
Yeah. So they can get 1,000 people in.
Yeah, I do think they will. But it's like, yeah, it's not going to look great.
Yeah, it's not good. Paul, what do you think that this Matsumoto show will draw?
How many people can you fit in there?
6,000.
Okay, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to get that many people. I do think it will outdraw the Overwatch show. I would say
I hope solid. So.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, I do think. I think like two. Does 2,000 feel like a fair?
That's okay. So let's okay. So there's only four categories of tickets on Matsumoto: special ringside, first floor reserve seat, first floor reserve seat B, which are like 2,000 yen less than the A version of that. And the second floor unreserved. So second floor unreserved is a circle. So plenty available. All the others are triangles. Although, mind you, we just found out that Yuma was...
Exactly. Yeah.
And we just don't... And then Atsuki, I assume, will be winning the tournament and challenging...
Yeah. So I do think that one will, like, draw pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, if they get 1,500 to 2,000, I would call that a success at this point.
Yeah.
I
mean, especially in, like, a really remote area, right? Like, because it's not like if you look at where Matsumoto is, it's not like you're going to be able to draw in, like, a bunch of people from like surrounding areas. Like the next biggest one is like Nagano, and I don't know how many people I want to go from like literally through the mountains to like get to Matsumoto.
So let's take a step back and more of a meta analysis of All Japan. Lots of people down on it, and I understand why, but do you see some light at the end of the tunnel, Paul?
Basically just with the end of the because we're about to get to the end of the June rain, which I think has just sapped a
lot
of energy.
They would not punk out Yuma in his hometown.
In his hometown.
Building that big. Hey, they had Yuma beat Kento in Fukuoka.
Yeah.
But that was a small venue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you can't just... Like, this is basically would have been, like, let's say if June had challenged in, like, Sendai, and they would have, like, punked him out there. Like, no, you can't do that. Or I don't know, maybe he's going to come out draped in, like, the local town flag, and then they're going to beat him. but yeah, no, I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think he's winning the title, like, because why else would you even run this big a building in this small of a town unless you felt certain that, you know, like, and here's the other thing. If he loses, you have just burnt down Matsumoto as a town forever. Like, you can basically never come back because you're not going to draw anymore. Like, right? Like, it's just done if he loses. Because, like, the people are just going to be like, well, why should we, like, you just told us that, like, oh yeah, our, like, basically, like, local star, like, one of the biggest guys, like, to come from this town. Like, you just, like, had him lose a big match, like, right in front of us. Like, why would we ever trust you again to, like...
Yeah, exactly. So, Paul, is Yuma surviving...
Hokkaido? I guess it depends who challenges him there.
Did I mention that they've got the Triple Crown in a bigger venue in Hokkaido? It's not in Sapporo, but it's like 1,000.
What if X is Jake Lee?
Oh God, I forgot about that. as far as I've heard, that he still does promo stuff for
New Japan.
But that would be kind of fun.
That would be, yeah. But... Because, like, it would, then the tournament would have had to be won by somebody that I think beats him. And I don't think, like, looking at the tournament, unless Kento wins the tournament, I don't think there's anybody in there that I think would be beating Yuma, to be quite honest. Unless X is, like, somebody that it's going to be really obviously winning the title.
There is a, is there a Corkin before? There is a Corkin for the Hokkaido Tour. So
they could do that there. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and what's this Tokyo Arena Tachikawa? How big is that? Because that's before the Corkin before. Oh, that's a basketball arena.
Yeah, I was about to say, didn't they run that one before?
September 23rd, right after.
Right, I think they ran that one already.
Yeah, for like a big show. Finals of the Royal Road are on September 15th at Corkin, and then on the 23rd of September, that Tokyo Tachikawa Tachi Arena, which is a basketball arena, of course, because that's Fukuda.
Yeah.
So that's where that's going to happen, right?
That's, yeah, I mean, that's where I think, yeah. So they do need someone relatively big then as well for like the Hokkaido show as well.
Hello.
Maybe it is Kento. If it is Kento, then like I think he's winning.
Arena Tachikawa Tachihi Tokyo. The show, we have five seat tiers. Four of them are triangled already.
Oh.
I'm assuming that that's the fan club.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That's respectable already.
Also feels like the fans maybe have like a guess that like Japanese fans have a guess that maybe something big is happening there.
Oh, for sure. So I think, well, I don't know who would be big enough.
I mean, it really could only be Kento, like out of the people that are in the tournament.
Nomura? Or is that too big?
Nomura. Yeah, right. I mean, but I don't think that Nomura is going to win the whole thing. But I mean, I guess maybe because I don't really see anybody else obvious. Yeah. And again, it depends who X is. But like, for example, I don't think X is going to be Anzai. So because that doesn't make any sense because he said he was going to be gone for like July and August.
Yeah. What are the chances of it's going to be Yuma versus Kento on December 31st?
See, if Hokkaido is Yuma versus Kento, I think Kento is winning.
Yeah.
And then I think they're going to do Kento Anzai December 31st. If not, yeah, I just don't like, I think the only way Yuma gets to December 31st is if he isn't getting challenged by Anzai or Kento. I think if either of them is challenging him, he's losing. If either of them is challenging him before then, before December 31st, he's losing. Okay. If not, I think he will actually get there, yeah. Because I don't think anybody else on the roster, I think, realistically, is going to, like, beat him right now.
Right.
Wait, what if X is Suwama?
Yeah, that's very possible, too.
I mean, I don't know why you would X Suwama, but... I mean, he hasn't been around, obviously, but still.
He's coming to, like, slap up Yuma.
Yeah?
For his light and pop.
Basically.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions there. So, I mean, hopefully it's some light at the end of the tunnel for All Japan out of this sort of... Too long, Shunsato Rain. And with that, Paul, I think we're done. And I think we can take a little more time off now.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything until after that August 3rd show to really cover and everything like that. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks and enjoy all the wrestling out there. Bye.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.